minute. This isn't music. This is the scream of science. 300 brake horsepower per liter of displacement. Not passing in a blur at 200 miles per hour. And in the middle of the whole metal, the carbon, sits flesh and blood. These are the masters of speed. This is Formula One. Is Formula One.
And welcome to the Lights Out Let's Go F1 podcast review of Bahrain. This is part of the season ticket on Dougie's Home Radio. As always, I have with me Rich Mason. Say hello, Rich.
Good evening, everybody. I hope you're all well.
Yeah, and my brother can't make it this week, but we will try and get him back on either next week or for the season finale in Abu Dhabi. So this week, as I said, we're covering last weekend's Grand Prix from Bahrain. And even though both championships have already been wrapped up in previous races, there's still plenty of talking points. And particularly with the awful accident involving Roman Grosjean. So yeah. I think normally, as I say, I start with a bit of news and we go qualifying, then race. But actually, I think let's start with what happened with lap one at this, where there was a huge accident with Roman Grosjean. Let's be honest, was lucky to come away from that alive, really. So yeah. We had an incident whereby turn three on lap one, we had a couple of cars going wide, which Roman Grosjean towards the back of the pack began to take evasive action, quite a hard sort of turn right across the track, really, to try and get out of the way of what he anticipated Kimi Räikkönen and a few people coming back onto the track on the left-hand side. It appeared that Daniil Kvyat would have been in his blind spot at that point, so he just wouldn't have seen him as he came across into Kvyat's path. So they sort of, Kvyat's front wheel tagged Grosjean's rear wheel, effectively turning Grosjean head on to the barriers. And then from then on, he was just a passenger and he's gone straight into the Armco barrier head on at 137 miles per hour. He's gone pretty much through the Armco barriers. It's ripped his car in two. Looks like it either severed the fuel lines or severed the fuel tank itself, spread fuel everywhere, causing the car to explode in a ball of flames. Then you had those dramatic scenes on TV where you saw Roman getting out of the car, jumping over the barriers, completely engulfed in flames. You had all the medical crew there. It was just incredible signs. I mean, you don't often see an accident like that, or of that magnitude. So, what were your initial thoughts when you saw that, Rich?
Well, the initial thoughts were we haven't seen a car explode in a ball of flame like that for a very long time. I think the last person I recall, and I don't remember what year, but it was Gerhard Berger when he was in Ferrari, and he just basically pretty much went head on.
Yes.
And Gerhard Berger really seriously burnt his sort of hands and forearms and what have you from that. And that was, you know, that would have been early 90s. I honestly can't remember when Berger had his crash, but that would have been early 90s, I think.
It must have been early 90s.
The last time I remember anything major flames was Felipe Massa leaving with the fuel line in his car.
Yep.
You know, when we had refueling, and again there was fire in the pit lane. But
and you had Jos Verstappen as well, didn't you, in the Benetton? Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you had Jos Verstappen as well.
Yeah.
Max's dad, who had had that as well. So, you know, over the last 25 plus nearly 30 years, this is a rare event. And the thing about, you know, the things we've spoken about there, really, two of those kind of pit lane incidents. Whereas, you know, really, if you look at Berger's incidents, the only one where a car was actually speared off and hit something and has burst into a ball of flame. And I think the telling point was being able to see the younger drivers, you know, people like Lando Norris and, yep. you know, Charles Leclerc and everybody who were looking at that were fairly dumbstruck.
Because it's just so rare nowadays that you see.
That, and also if you saw the pictures of the back end of Roman's car, it was literally just split in two. I think the angle at which he hit that barrier is on an angle anyway, because it's used to protect the emergency vehicles for getting onto the track. I think.
That's right, and it's on the inside of the corner, so you wouldn't normally see a car going headfirst. You know,
It's not something you would at all expect. And the angle at which he hit it, I mean, if you look at the pictures,
the overhead shots.
You mentioned it. You may have seen the overhead. I just recall seeing the sort of the car and the halo, and you can make out that the car is effectively wedged kind of bottom side first, if you can think, I mean, wedged through the barrier.
Yeah.
And it is faintly a bit of a miracle that he got out.
Those cars, you know, going head first like that, it's like a spear, you know, and it's just speared straight through the Armco. And let's make, you know, no bones about it, the halo device, so for people who listen who don't know, that's the bar that goes across the cockpit now to protect the driver's heads. When that was introduced, you know, it had its critics because it didn't make the cars look particularly pretty.
Roman was one of them, and he
100%.
Said 100%. It was an open formula and all the rest of it, but
yeah, and that is now, you know, been proven to have stopped Roman's head making contact with the barrier first, and it would have been an unsurvivable impact to his head. So, you know, that completely saved his life. You know, there was doubts about when the halo was first introduced. There was a crash with Leclerc where somebody was a car went over the top of his car. It looked like that probably saved his life, but you know, no one was quite sure whether what would have happened if the halo device wasn't there. But this accident is clear showing that safety device has now saved a human life on the track.
Completely and utterly. And Marion Grosjean, Roman's wife, said in a tweet she thanked a number of people, and you know, and one of them in particular was Philippe Bianchi, Jules Bianchi's father, and the Bianchi family, because you know she thinks about them often, and Jules Bianchi is a fellow countryman of Roman, and you know she was acknowledging the fact that the awful incident that happened to Jules has resulted in having the halo device, which has saved her husband's life this last weekend.
I mean, I've got a few facts about the accident I was looking at. So, as I said before, you know, Roman was traveling 137 miles an hour when he hit the barrier head on.
The biggest thing is the G forces, man.
I mean,
53 G to have experience,
and it just shows that, you know, the safety advances that we've made. So, Dr. Ian Roberts, in the medical car, was on the scene within 9 seconds of the crash, which is unbelievable. The marshals were there immediately as well with fire extinguishers. Some of the guys, including Dr. Ian Roberts as well, also had fire extinguishers and were able to spray it to actually give Roman a chance to get out the car.
Yeah.
So Roman got out the car within 39 seconds and then leapt over the barrier. He lost a boot in the process. He's received terribly, quite bad burns to his hands and to his ankle, obviously, where his boot came off. As I've said, the halo device certainly prevented Roman's head making contact with the barrier first. So I just think, you know, a massive shout out to the marshals, the medical team, particularly Dr. Ian Roberts, who was the main medic on the scene. Back in the summer, you know, I used my spot on the season ticket show when we were talking about unsung heroes of sport. And one of my picks were sort of marshals and support staff at racetracks up and down the country, week in, week out. And this week, just you know, fully goes to prove that those people who are quite often volunteers, you know, are worth their weight, worth their weight in gold, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's when you see, in, I mean, Dr. Roberts, who, you know, essentially ran towards the fireball with an open face, he had an open face helmet.
Correct, yes.
If people aren't aware that the, you know, they don't, I mean, show my age, you know, they don't show 4-star in Formula One cars.
No, it's high octane, isn't it?
Very, very, very specialist high octane fuel. And when it burns at that level, it doesn't require that much oxygen. So it becomes extremely intense heat. Yeah. You know, and for him to run towards that fireball, you know, albeit with the fire extinguisher, but, you know, I mean, you know, that really was.
I mean, Roman's visor was partly melted as well. Yeah. It shows, you know, just how close things are getting and how hot things are.
Absolutely. And for Ian Roberts to run towards that to get him out, it shows you where the focus was. And the marshals, as you say, running across, and a lot of the marshals, most marshals in this country are all volunteers. Yeah. You know, they do it for the love of it. And they are absolutely unsung heroes. Absolutely.
They certainly are. And I think, you know, F1 as a whole, we're certainly standing on the shoulders of giants, such as Charlie Whiting and Dr. Sid Watkins. Who both have sadly passed away, but, you know, their push for advancement in driver safety over the last 10, 20, 30 years has been immense and led us to a point where Roman can walk away from a crash of that magnitude relatively unhurt, you know, as such.
I think the fact he didn't even break any bones, I mean, he obviously he suffered some fairly bad burns, and I'd heard that he may have broken a rib or two, but it turns out he hasn't. And
correct, yeah.
You know, to decelerate at 53G in the space of, I don't know,
a couple of meters.
I was going to say inches almost.
Yeah.
And to not suffer is a testament to that survival cell that they every F1 car is designed with, this survival cell, which is around, you know, the driver's feet, legs, where the body sits, everything else. You know, in the most horrific of circumstances and the most testing of circumstances, stood that test, and you know, and a driver was able, you know, fire notwithstanding, was able to get out and walk away from that.
I mean, what's also, I suppose, a positive that you can take away is, you know, all of those safety advances obviously, you know, led to Roman walking away. There clearly obviously is a little bit of luck as well, because there always is. But what's important is F1 never stands still. So they will, every crash that happens, you know, they critique it to the nth degree to understand what happens with that particular crash, to see what they can improve safety wise going forward. So this crash will have ultimately an effect on the survival of somebody in the future, because they will learn from this crash and understand further and bring in further safety advances, which is
agreed. And I think the thing that they will change is the barriering system, that they've got certain parts of the track. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people who've watched F1 will say, well, you know, why weren't their tires there? Why wasn't there that tech pro stuff that they have? That can bring about some of its own complications as well. The tech pro stuff, they can, you know, the car can get buried quite deep in there. You know, you wouldn't ordinarily expect a car to go off at the angle that Roman went off at that point in the track. You know, 6.5 miles of tech pro barrier either side of each Grand Prix circuit is, you know, gonna cost a bit of money. They have got a lot of it, but you know, it's a case of, I can see the Armcos that have been used getting a bit of a redesign.
Certainly.
But
and of course, those barriers, you know, Formula One cars over the last couple of years have got a lot faster than recently, and those barriers were designed, you know, quite a while ago as well. So
it's the advancement. You know, you rightly say, you know, Formula One cars now are, you know, there was complaints a few years ago when the engine regs changed and that they weren't as fast. And I always seem to recall that a lot of lap records were held by Schumacher in a Ferrari in 2000.
Or Raikkonen.
Yeah, sort of about that era, 2004, 2005, where they had the V10s going hell for leather and 1,000 brake horsepower. Everybody sort of says that was the time it was so quick. But, you know, their cornering speeds are now quicker. The cars are quicker on the straights. It harks back to the eras of you know, I still am into, you know, following rally cars, and, you know, the Group B rally cars that were nigh on 1,000 brake horsepower, which were just absolute, you know, almost a four-wheel drive bomb on wheels going through forests.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they outlawed it all, and they went, this is just far too dangerous. It's like, you know, these are just homologation specials. You only have to make 200 of them or whatever. And then you fast forward 15, 20 years when they capped it at 300 brake horsepower in rallying. You fast forward 15 years, they've caught up. They're, you know.
That's right, yeah.
Early 2000, you know, what was it, late 80s? So, you know, mid-2000s, the cars were just as quick as Group B, if not quicker now. And I think we've got the same in Formula One. That
there's always a constant fight to try and slow these cars down because the advancements in technology is incredible, isn't it?
You're right. It does sound bonkers that you should try and slow cars down. It is the pinnacle of motorsport. But, you know, if you let the engineers run riot, you'll end up with cars that will be physically undrivable because, you know, the car can go around a corner at 120 and the driver can't because he'll pass out.
Exactly. If you gave Adrian Newey carte blanche to design a car, a human would not be able to drive it. So,
yeah, exactly. He's like, yes, I've designed this car. It can lap the Nürburgring in 38 seconds. Yeah. However, there's nobody alive that can buy it.
Yeah, exactly.
It is what it is. But yeah, they are going so fast these days, and you know, and incidents that can't be sort of prepared for in terms of the safety of the track are likely to happen. That sounds a bit odd, but you know what I mean. There'll always be something. But you're right. I mean, F1 will learn from this, and there will be redesigns, and we'll see what's what.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, you know, it starts with the podcast off on a slightly somber footing, but I think it's certainly important to start with that. It was a
Well, it is somber, but I think, you know, we highlight the fact that, you know, I've seen a couple of tweets from Romain, and you know, he's been in hospital. He's got his hands bandaged up, but he's chipper and he's well.
That's right. Yeah.
And he's itching to get back in the
car. He's looking to be back in Abu Dhabi, apparently. So yeah, he'll be racing the last race.
He would like to finish his F1 career. And he knows that he's not going to be in a drive next year.
Yeah.
He would like to finish his F1 career at Yas Marina Circuit and not have it finish in an Armco barrier.
Yeah, exactly.
Thankfully walking away from it. But, you know, the interview that I've read, the sort of interviews I've read with him, he's, you know, he was thinking about his kids when he got out of that car, and it just, you know, I've read a lot more into Romain Grosjean, and I know we've always been a bit sort of flippant about, you know, well, he's a bit crashy, isn't he, and he's gung ho, and he's always been gung ho, but he's clearly, you know, he's a feisty racer. He always has been. He'll always go for stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, but at the same time, I think he may have had a bit of a wake-up call as to what he has to lose. You know, he's got a beautiful wife. He's been married since 2012, which was the same year I got married. So there's a little bit of kinship there. You know, he's got three lovely kids, and, you know, you sit there. And I do wonder if he's going to sit there in the next few days and go, yeah, perhaps I might sort of trundle around a little bit at Yas Marina and wave goodbye to the crowd and not necessarily go for that gap.
There you go. But then again, you never know, because Roman wouldn't be Roman if he didn't go for that gap and see what happened.
That's very true. Anyway.
So anyway, a little bit of news from around the paddock and stuff then. So
is there some news, Dan?
Yeah, there's some news.
I don't think there's any news at all, is there? I don't think there's two new drivers going to be thundering around circuits in different cars. Well, exactly. One brand new, one in a different. Nothing's gone on at all, has it? Come on, let's get into it.
It's quite exciting, and first of all, I'm going to leave the driver changes until a bit later. So we're going to start with, first of all, in Bahrain, the teams were testing next year's tyres, the new tyres in practice, and the drivers were less than complimentary about them. So I feel a bit for Pirelli, because every year they are asked to make a tyre to a certain spec that the FIA want. I.e. to degrade after a certain number of laps, etc. And every year they get criticised because the tyres are rubbish, which the tyres aren't. They're doing exactly as they are designed, but the drivers obviously do not like tyres that do not allow them to push 100%.
Yeah,
it is interesting.
Yeah, they're not, the Pirelli tyres, the road tyres aren't great. They're not brilliant. Every time I've seen people on forums who've got certain cars, they go, oh, well, when you get an AMG CC, when you get this or when you get that, and you've had Pirellis on it from the factory, bin those off and put Michelin Pilot Sport 4s on or something, and they're much better. It transforms the handling. And you sit there going, they're not well thought of on road cars. I do wonder if they're the best company to be doing all of this technical work. I can only hope that they've sucked all of their effort into making, you know, Formula One tyres to the spec that F1 wants, to the detriment of their road car manufacturing division. Because if they haven't, then probably they need to look at binning Pirelli off and getting Michelin on board or something next year.
Well, unfortunately, Rich, I was hoping to get Pirelli to sponsor this podcast, but
they're not going to sponsor it now. I allegedly rubbished their road tyres a little bit. I'm just going on what I see on you know, forums and various other motoring forums I'm on, and they're fairly roundly chastised on there, shall we say. I mean, what were the drivers' comments? If they were less than complimentary, did anybody say they were possibly bollocks?
So Lewis Hamilton actually was extremely outspoken about them in the interview after practice, and he basically said, why are we using these tyres? Why are we even practicing with them? Why didn't we use the ones we have this year? Because basically, I mean, as
because
I say...
Because I've won probably, a world championship on these tyres, and I know what I'm doing.
Because he 100% understands them. There is definitely an agenda there. And I'm if
you want any more proof that he wants that 8th world title
100%.
Next year, that's where it is.
100%. That hunger is still 100% there.
Exactly.
So, this weekend also, we had, for the second time this season, and for the second time in back-to-back races, something very unusual. Do you know what it was?
No.
It's very, very bizarre. We had a loose dog on track again, which was really strange. Yeah. So I was watching the coverage. It was qualifying coverage. And there was a loose dog on track this weekend and the weekend before. I don't know what's happening with these dogs, but they seem to be getting into the racetrack. But the reason why I mentioned that, because it was as Vettel was going around and he saw this dog and he came onto the radio. And he mentioned that there was a dog on track. And he started singing, "Who Let the Dogs Out?" Now, it was quite nice.
I had a busy weekend and I wasn't able to see the full qualifying coverage.
It was quite nice. He was just driving around going, "Who Let the Dogs Out?" Now, the reason why I mentioned that was actually, it was quite nice. Obviously, after Vettel's got that podium this season as well, to see a bit of his spirit back. And I think perhaps he's now looking forward to next year. Now that, you know, his reign at Ferrari's coming to an end, he's only got a couple of races left this season where it's been a horror for him. And it was just good to see, you know, him back mentally, I think, and back in the game.
He's good value, Seb is, I know.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
I think he's, you know, he understands his position as one of the elder statesmen of the grid, shall we say. You know, there's no denying he's still quick and he's still got fabulous racecraft. There's no doubt about it. But I have always liked his personality off the track, I have to say.
Yeah, definitely. So we've got two new drivers in at the Haas team. So we have Nikita Mazepin, who is a Russian driver.
Does he come with any money, Dan?
He comes with a hell of a lot of money. A hell of a lot of money.
What's his backing?
I'm not sure, but I know that it brings a hell of a lot of money into the team.
Is it Vladimir?
It quite possibly
maybe a state-sponsored Formula One driver.
It could possibly be Vladimir, but there we go.
Unlike Sorotkin, who I don't know, he had a few quid as well, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And also Mick Schumacher, so son of Michael Schumacher.
We will see M. Schumacher.
We will
on coverage next year. And yes, Mick Schumacher, who he's about to tie up the GP2 title, is he not, this year?
Yeah, it's between three drivers. It's one race left next weekend, I think. So it's between three drivers there. But Mick has got the lead in the championship, so obviously he's the one in the driver's seat there, really.
He is.
But yeah, so that's two new drivers on the grid, two rookies, which would be good to see. And then we've also got the added bit of Lewis Hamilton tested positive for COVID this weekend. In fact, on Wednesday, was it this morning it got released?
Well, he apparently felt unwell on Monday. He apparently had a test on Sunday and tested negative. And they tested, like, I think he was tested three times last week, all negative. Yeah. And the final one being on the day of the race on Sunday. So I'm now struggling to figure out where he might have picked it up from. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? But so obviously he's tested positive for COVID, which means he won't be racing this weekend. And there was a scramble for everyone on Twitter to try and figure out who's going to take his place.
Well, I texted you. I said, is it going to be Van Dorn or Gutierrez or Hulk?
And I was going for a walk around the marina in Porter's Head, and I thought to myself on that morning, I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if you had Russell making a jump from Williams to Mercedes as a bit of a test race for his future role at Mercedes. Obviously, Williams run a Mercedes engine, so, you know, Merck could sweeten the deal to release him from his contract for the race there by giving Williams a bit of a discount on the engine or something for next year.
We put an extra turbo on it and make it faster.
Exactly.
That's my Toto Wolff impression. It's not brilliant.
It's pretty good.
I've got to work on it. I'm still wanting Toto Wolff and Arnold Schwarzenegger to have a conversation live on telly, because I just think that would be the most... And I know they're both Austrian, aren't they?
They are both Austrian.
Such strong accents.
It's incredible. But that has happened. So Russell will be in that Merc seat, which is excellent. Now, my question to you is, who has the most pressure on them this coming weekend? So, is Bottas under pressure? Because if Russell goes into that seat and beats him, it's going to be thinking, Bottas, what are you doing at Merck? Or is there the pressure under on Russell because he's going into that seat? It's his sort of big chance. If he messes it up, what does it do to his career?
I think they... Pre the weekend, I think George knows that they'll bring about their own pressure. I don't think they'll feel pressure from the other driver. I think Bottas will be quick. I think if Russell out qualified him, I would be utterly astonished. And we know Russell has got that Williams up to sort of, you know, he's qualified that Williams in the top.
He's qualified very well all season, isn't he?
You know, and that is clearly an absolute glittering, polished turd of a car that's emanated from the Williams garage factory this year. It's not their best effort. They have set the standards in years past. They've had the best cars forever and a day in years gone past. And they know they have not released decent cars for the last 2 years. Now, I think George, there has been, you know, a lot of talk in the paddock around how good George Russell is. If you look at his record next to Lando Norris in GP2, you know, he was in a slightly better car in GP2, but he soundly spanked Lando Norris. And Lando's been doing a decent job in, you know, a sort of mid, you know, a fairly, I'm going to call the McLaren midfield. I think they had a great weekend this weekend. They did. You know, that is an upper midfield car that's clearly going places. You know, and I think George will be, he'll put his own pressure on his shoulders. You're right. If he really doesn't do very well at all, people will, you know, then the doubts may be raised.
But it is hard to just get into a different car hasn't been set up all across the season for you, your style of driving. You know,
that's my concern, is that everybody will look at it and go, oh, well, you haven't absolutely spanked it around the track. And it's a case of, you know, everybody sort of...
But the people at Merck will understand that, you know. Not the viewers, so...
This isn't something internal, and that's why I say I don't think Bottas or Russell will be bothered by one or the other or what it means. Until possibly later on Saturday. Because if it does turn up that Russell comes into qualifying and is thereabouts or even beats Bottas, then are going to be some raised eyebrows across the finish side of the garage.
There is.
You know,
I think Bottas is under greater pressure, I think.
You think he's under greater pressure? I'd say before Saturday, Bottas will think, well, no, I'm the man. And if you know, I've said it, you know, a long time, Bottas is absolutely lightning on a Saturday. He knows how to qualify. If you look at his qualifying performance against, you know, the greatest qualifier in the history of our sport, he stacks up pretty well. He stacks up really well. I think, you know, it's possibly an element that's flattering him. I think Lewis has concentrated this entire year on race setup as opposed to qualifying setup.
Yeah,
I think he's taken the view that, you know, you've got to play the game, and the game is tyres. Hence the reason he's so brassed off about them changing them for next year, because I think he's got his head around them now.
Yeah, but so they've had 2 years on these tyres, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. So the game is tyres and understanding and having the chassis and the race set up for Sunday, which I think he said, you know what, screw qualifying. I know I can put something that's race prepped for race pace. I can get it there or thereabouts, and a number of times, obviously it's been on pole. So there could be a bit of flattery of Valtteri's pole performances against Lewis. Having said that, you know, even when he was at Williams, Valtteri was always very, very quick. He was always a very good qualifier. So, you know, I think prior to the weekend, not so much. Saturday night could be interesting if Russell does well. What I think will be interesting on Sunday is that I do still think Russell's racecraft is extremely mature for somebody.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that's the thing that will tell, because I think Valtteri still has the tendency to get hot-headed, and Russell will know what he's been given. I think anything sort of fifth, sixth place, and you know, for Russell will be fantastic. And anything more than that would be an utter bonus.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I don't think he's going to be expected to beat Valtteri at all. However, I do think that George in his head will be sat down there thinking, you've got to get out there and get your head around this car pretty quick on Saturday.
I mean, he has, you know, he has driven, I think, last year's Merc, which isn't far off this year's sort of car. He has driven it in, was it the Young Drivers Test or something like that? But there's been a time when he has tested that Merc. So, you know, he knows what the car's about, so hopefully it's
going to be really, really exciting to see how he goes. I'm really, 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 really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
you know, not happy that Lewis has got his COVID, because now he cannot equal the 13 wins. What we do know about Lewis is he does require incentives. He likes an incentive, and that's his incentive for next year, I think.
100%, yeah, 100%. I agree. And another bit of news which sort of flew under the radar of, you know, the other driver changes. Obviously, so Britain, Jack Aitken will be backfilling for Russell at Williams. So
he will.
Give him a chance.
I don't know much about Jack Aitken. He was in GP2. The only thing I know is, I have a very good friend of mine from the States called Russell, who I'm not quite sure how he did it, but he's a jammy swine. He managed to watch last year's Monaco Grand Prix from a yacht in Monaco. And it was a bloody big yacht as well, judging by his pictures. Anyway, nice. He had his picture taken with Jack Aitken.
Ah, there you go.
So so he plumped that on Facebook for me earlier this evening. And he's quite... You know, I mean, we've been used to a lot of young drivers on the grid. You know, Max Verstappen was how old when he came into Formula 1? 18, was he?
17
when he came in. Jack Aitken's 25, and it's his debut Formula 1 race. So it's kind of reminding people, a lot of people go, 25, isn't he sort of over the hill? It's like, no, that's kind of the normal age to sort of come into the top level of motorsport. So I don't know a lot about him. It's going to be interesting to see how he stacks up against Latifi in the other Williams.
It'd be good. It's a good chance for these guys to, you know, get into a Formula 1 race, really.
And another Brit on the grid.
Yes.
Which is good as well.
Which is excellent. So we spent quite a bit of time with the crash of Roman and that. So a quick flyby of qualifying. So it was kind of business as usual at the front. We had Lewis on pole, Bottas second, and Max Verstappen third. Albon gave a good showing in fourth. Which I think is what he needed to do with the doubt still hanging over his seat at Red Bull next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, he did. He did a good one this weekend.
Yeah, he did, actually. Perez still doing, I think, you know, a really good job now. So he was in fifth.
I'm going to make you eat words about Sergio Perez. I think he's had another cracking weekend, and just unfortunately the equipment let him down.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, Perez in the second half of the year, I think has been absolutely faultless, and he, I am really, really warming to him now. I think he's, you know, becoming a, well, he, I think he is a really good driver. Obviously, you had Perez in fifth, and you had Stroll in 13th. You know, so it definitely business as usual with Stroll underperforming in the 13th spot in what is last year's Mercedes. But there you go. So you know the top 10 were Hamilton in first, Bottas second, Verstappen third, Albon fourth, Perez fifth, Ricciardo sixth, Ocon seventh, Gasly another good performance in eighth, Norris in ninth, which is a good performance there really, because that McLaren, although it's one of the head of the midfield pack, it wasn't actually that fast this weekend apparently. But so it was a good display by Norris to in ninth. Sainz had car issues in Q2, unfortunately, that put him out. And you had Kvyat in 10th. And you had both Ferraris out in Q2 again, with Vettel in 11th and Leclerc in 12th.
Yes, Vettel out qualifying Leclerc again.
Yes, it's quite interesting, that little fight between them, actually, because and I'll come on to it in the race as well, but sort of, the gloves are off between those two, really, because, you know, Vettel knows that he's going. Leclerc knows that Ferrari are backing him and, you know, he's got the contract for whatever it is, 4 years, whatever. I don't think either of those two are giving each other any inch, really, now when it comes to racing each other. It's a good little interesting battle between them for the next couple of races.
It is.
And I think Vettel has that hunger to just try and put Leclerc in his place a little bit over the next couple of races before he leaves the team.
Yeah, so it's going to be very, very interesting to see that.
It is. So on to the race. And before that, little bit of trivia about Bahrain. So, despite never winning in Bahrain, who has the most podiums?
Ooh.
Who do you think?
Oh, good God.
It's an interesting little fact I saw.
Despite never winning.
Never winning, but they've had the most podiums.
They've never won it. Oh, good God. It's going to have to be. Is it Kimi Raikkonen?
It is friend of the podcast, Kimi Raikkonen. Yes,
he's had eight podiums. I was just trying to go through who's... Seb's won it. Obviously, Fernando's won it. Felipe Massa's won it. Jensen's won it as well in the past. We'll get that in. Got to get Jensen in.
Get Jensen in, yeah.
He won it.
Our mutual friends, Mark Wilkins, will love that.
Absolutely. you know, obviously Lewis has won it, Rosberg's won it, so it's got to be because of the length of time it's been going. He's never won it, but he's had the most podiums. That's good.
He has. I mean, one thing I didn't realise is Bahrain's been on the calendar since 2004. It always seems to me like it's a newish race to me, but 2004, it's been going for quite a long time now.
It has been going a long time. It's a good track, actually, in all fairness.
Yeah, it is a good track. Yeah,
it's not a bad track. It's
apart from the 2010 one where they had the extended track, which was just some mind-numbing corners that was not very good, and they changed it for 2011 back to what it is now. But there you go.
Yes, exactly. It's produced some good races over the years, without a shadow of a doubt.
It has. So my guesses for the race at the last podcast was that Bottas would win, Hamilton second, and Albon third. And you said, you and both you and Adam said it would be Hamilton, Bottas, and Verstappen. So none of us were a million miles off. Not quite in the right order we got things. But yeah, there you go. So obviously, with the race, so you had that incident on the first lap. Just a quick question. So, I mean, how do these drivers come to terms with witnessing an accident like that, seeing all the replays that they saw when they were in the pit lane, and then how do they get back in the car and race as hard?
I think the key part of that is, Dan, we don't know.
Yeah.
Because we sit and watch it and drink beer.
Yeah.
We can't wedge our, frankly, very svelte but very middle-aged forms into a single seater like they can.
Hey, I've lost 2 stone in lockdown. You watch yourself.
You've done, you, I have to say, I've done very, very well. And to be fair to myself, I have lost a bit of weight, and I haven't drunk so much over the last sort of 2, 3, 4 weeks or so. But yeah, I mean, I've been in a single seater, and I'll tell you what, you're going to wedge me into a Formula One car. Listen, I think they are a different breed.
They are.
It is all about getting in there, and it's like, oh God, that's terrible. Anyway, when do I get back in the car? Having said that,
because quite a few drivers were visibly shaken up.
Yeah. Having said that, and they all understand it, and I think I came back to it again. It's the younger ones as well. You know, I think, you know, the likes of Hamilton and Sebastian and Raikkonen have you know, been around the block and have seen it, and they've seen some pretty appalling incidents even in their time. You know, but I think some of the younger drivers did have a bit of a moment when they went, oh God, yeah, this, you can die doing this, can't you?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you can. Every time you get into a Formula One car, despite all of the safety that we have around the sport now, you are still driving essentially a 190 mile an hour bomb round a circuit.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Basically
it. So, you know, it is. It's much safer.
But a lot of them, I think, feel artificially safe getting in the car because of all the safety measures that, you know, and advancements that have happened. But it's true, and it is a reminder that you can die.
Yeah, and I think the difference is that the you know, the previous awful tragedy we had with Jules Bianchi, you know, did involve, you know, one of the cranes coming onto the circuit to remove a stricken car, and it was that crane that he hit that was so terrible. So I still think, you know, after that incident, people were thinking, yeah, but it's the crane that wouldn't normally be there, so clearly we can change the design of the crane and then everything will be fine. What they got this time is like, oh crumbs, yeah, absolutely. Oh
yeah.
Christ,
yeah, great.
I can't remember who was interviewed. Was it Lando? I'm not sure it was Lando. It was one of the younger drivers. That was just a case of, she said, I didn't know a Formula One car could split in half like that.
Yeah. Which obviously it's designed to do to a certain degree because it dissipates the energy. So the
Exactly that.
But even still, it's horrific, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do think there was a bit of taking stock in the pit lane. But, you know, ultimately that hour is up. They got in the car and they were like, yep, let's go again.
Yeah, it was amazing to see, really. Absolutely amazing to see. So Mercedes, so it was another dominant display by Hamilton to take the victory under the lights in Bahrain. Yeah. I don't know. I think we've run out of superlatives for Hamilton this season, really. He's just fantastic. I'm going to cut short talking about Hamilton because the boys on the season ticket bench will utterly lambast me if I talk about Hamilton anymore in gushing terms. So I'm just going to say he won the race and well done, Hamilton.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. I could go on, but I'm not going to. So Bottas had a bad start, got bogged down.
Very bad.
And then ended up getting a puncture from running over some debris. So kind of ruined his race and ended up down into 16th when he rejoined after pitting for a new tyre. He ended up finishing 8th. So I don't know. I think he made a bit of hard work getting through the traffic. But it was a reasonable recovery back to 8th. But I don't think it was a great weekend for Bottas.
Not sparkling, no.
No. On to Ferrari. So as I said, you know, that Vettel and Leclerc battle kind of hotting up for the last couple of races, which is quite interesting. They had a bit of a tangle on the first lap. I think Leclerc cut straight across Vettel. Vettel was straight onto the radio, you know, talking about how aggressive Leclerc was being. It was... yeah, kind of bit tasty racing between those two. Leclerc finishing 10th and Vettel finishing 13th. So a bit of a non-weekend for Ferrari as well, really,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, it was a bit of a non-weekend for them, I agree.
Yeah, it was. Red Bull, so you had Verstappen finishing second. It was his first podium in 3 races. I hadn't realised that until I heard that, but that was very interesting. And then you had Alex Albon in third.
which was what he needed to do.
It was, and I am a fan of Albon, but did it flatter to deceive a little bit?
Well,
he was running behind Perez for a while in the race, wasn't he? It was only Perez that going out with the mechanical issue that put him on the podium.
Exactly.
So did he really do what he needed to do?
I say he did what he needed to do. The post-race points and scores on the board suggest that he did. However, there's just an inkling bit of me thinking that they're kind of looking around and they're sat there thinking, yeah, you're not quite the ticket, Sunshine. You're not quite.
I don't know, because
just something that's not quite giving them what they need.
They keep saying that, you know, they do actually really want him in that seat next year.
Does he have a contract next year?
Not yet, no.
No, well, then they don't really want him in that seat, do they? They can say anything they like. Mr. Horner is a weaselly politician of a man who,
maybe.
You know, he is, come on, he's like a lot of the guys down there. You know, he'll say things in interviews. And he's very giving, Christian Horner is. You know, he's very giving in interviews. He likes to, you know, be open and honest and all the rest of it. It's like, yeah, but we know that you're not really a lot of the time. You know, if they were backing Albon that much, they'd have sorted out a contract for him already, and they haven't.
We will see. I am going to say he will be there next year.
Do you think?
I'm going to say it.
I think it will depend. The fact they haven't given him a contract will depend on his performance this weekend at Sakhir, which is Bahrain 2, if you like.
Yeah.
And Abu Dhabi as well. If he puts in, you know, solid performances at both weekends, then I agree with you. I think he will. If he cocks up one or both weekends,
then I think
there will be, you know, they know full well Checo is out of contract next year. They will be looking across at him and going, you're bloody quick and you bring a bit of money with you as well. What's not to like?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. That's true. Yeah, interesting. It's going to play out over the next couple of races for sure.
Yep.
So McLaren, so that was a big points haul for them in the race for third place. So you had Norris in fourth and Sainz finishing in fifth. It was a really good, solid race by both those drivers. Excellent recovery drive from Sainz after his issues in qualifying two. So I think Lando looked really comfortable in the car all weekend. And you know, that fourth place, I don't think that McLaren was due that fourth place. Lando certainly piloted it home. I think it was excellent. I think Lando's been really good this year.
He's racecraft.
For a young lad.
Mature head on his shoulders, knows how to race, you know.
Yeah.
I think actually Daniel Ricciardo coming into that McLaren team next year is just what he needs.
I think so. Yeah, I agree.
He's very, very, he's got a fabulous relationship with Carlos.
Yeah.
And
Ricciardo's a similar sort of person to Carlos.
He is, but I think Ricciardo is a little bit more fighty in the car than Science is fighty. Science is fighty, but they're really good mates. And I think Ricciardo will be, they'll be friendly. Absolutely, I think they will carry on that decent vibe that McLaren seem to have at the moment. When the helmet goes on, Ricciardo will be out there, and I think Lando will learn from Daniel Ricciardo as well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely.
I think it'll only be good for him.
So McLaren are now on 171 points as a constructor in third place, ahead of Racing Point, who are on 154. So Racing Point not scoring this weekend has really hurt them.
Yeah, massively.
So it's all to play for with them. Two races left.
Mm.
That brings us on nicely to Renault, because they're also in the hunt for that third place. You had P7 for Ricciardo and Ocon in P9. So they've slipped to fifth in that fight for third now.
Yeah, they have.
So they didn't quite capitalise as much as McLaren did on Racing Point not scoring. It's certainly an interesting fight that is.
Yeah.
But the bigger question at Renault is, will Cyril Abitbol get his tattoo that he promised Ricciardo for getting the podium? That's the big question. Is it going to happen?
Is it going to happen? Has he not had it yet? I thought the whole deal was he's got to have it.
He's not had it yet. They're now in Bahrain and they're going to Abu Dhabi, so the tattooists can't fly out because of the COVID protocols in those countries.
Oh,
and then Ricardo's off. So it, has Cyril managed to sidestep this or not?
I think he's massively managed to sidestep it.
You never know. You never know. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so it was a bit of a nondescript weekend for Renault, really. They had real promise at the start of the season. They had a couple of podiums and kind of tailed off a little bit at the moment. Whether they're putting their efforts into next year's car, perhaps.
I'm hoping they are, and I think, you know, you've said before you're quite buoyed to know that Fernando Alonso has been hammering around tracks in
100%. Cannot wait for that lad to get back in a Renault
car. If I was Renault, you'd see how things go and you go, right, clearly, boys, we'll do what minimal evolution we can to this year's car.
They've had their podiums. They've had that moment in the limelight this year, and I think it's right. Let's focus next year. We've got Alonso coming in. Let's see if we can do it next year.
You know, and they've got deep enough pockets. Renault have one of the richest teams on the grid. So I think we'll see Renault coming out next year with a very, very competitive car.
Yeah, definitely. So on to AlphaTauri. So Gasly, again, impressed in P6. He effectively won stop the race. Although he pitted twice, he actually pitted very early under the safety car for hard tyres, went most of the race and then pitted again halfway through for hard tyres. It was more or less effectively a one-stop race. But he made them last. And, very solid race by Gasly again to end up in P6.
It is. It was a good one, and the reason it's in, you know, I mean, if people aren't aware, you know, the Bahrain circuit is very, very, very tough on tyres when they.
It can be abrasive, but all the sound is around, can it?
It is. It's very abrasive. Part of the reason for that is that it's surfaced using Welsh quarried aggregate. So they
really.
Shipped, yep, they shipped all of the aggregate for the tarmac there over from Wales.
Wow.
It's hard as nails, that stuff, and it is very, very. That's why the drivers were sort of questioning tyres and everything over the weekend. So for Gasly to effectively, as you say, one stop that race is very impressive.
Yeah. And then you had Kvyat, who had a pretty busy race, really. So obviously he was involved in that incident with Roman.
He pretty much had front and centre of the two incidents that were in the Grand Prix, did he not?
He did, yes. Because then he was involved in the coming together with Lance Stroll that saw Lance Stroll end up upside down on the track.
Yes.
Now Kvyat got a penalty for this, which means that the stewards and that thought it was his fault. He ended up in 11th. I thought that was really harsh because, again, so Kvyat was coming up on the inside of Stroll. Now, agreed, it was a bit of a half-assed attempt. You know, he kind of left his car in there a little bit. So, okay. But Stroll, again, doesn't know what the size of his car and just turned into the corner with Kvyat being on the inside of him. I thought it was a racing incident. I didn't think any drivers particularly to blame, but I thought it was harsh on Kvyat.
I'd agree it's harsh for the penalty, and I'd agree that it's a bit of a racing incident. And I think what, you know, when people say, well, if it's a racing incident, what does that mean? It's like, well, you know, Kvyat probably did attempt a bit of an inside move.
But was never fully committed, was he?
In all honesty, he knew he was never going to come off. But a driver's always going to go for a gap. There's a gap.
Of course, yeah.
Go for it.
That's right.
You know, if you, the day, you know, was it Senna said the day you don't go for a gap is like the day you...
100%. That's what he's been interviewed by Jackie Stewart, wasn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, you've got to appreciate that if you've left a degree of tarmac between yourself and the apex, then you know you've kind of got to half expect somebody's going to be there.
Yeah, you've got to expect,
especially when you're in the first couple of laps of the race and everybody's bunched up together. The other side of the coin is that, you know, the mirrors on a Formula One car are next to bloody useless.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And they sit quite low in the car now. The sides of the cockpit are quite high, and as we saw from Roman's incident, thank God that they're like that.
Yep.
However, from a safety point of view, you know, it's great from a safety point of view. However, from a visibility perspective, I wouldn't want a 3-point turn a Formula One car at Morrison's car park, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't want to tightly maneuver it around a corner on some of the estate roads that we enjoy in this part of the world that we live in, Dan. For those that don't know, they're really bloody tight.
They literally
you can't see around. You can't see around the side of it, and you know the cars are long. They are wide as well these days. So, you know, when you say he doesn't know how wide his car is, no, he doesn't. He turns in and he should be looking in that mirror to see if he's got anybody there. But as best as I can make out, those mirrors aren't particularly good at.
No, I agree. They're not
supposed to do so.
Yeah,
I don't quite know whether there's anything that can be done with technology these days to give, you know, perhaps rear facing cameras or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. You know, something might happen, but you know, obviously, incidents like this and having a car go upside down. Hey, it's great for viewing.
It is, yeah.
It's
but yeah,
exciting.
I just felt it was pretty hard on Daniel Kvyat, really. But yeah,
I think the points on Daniel was very harsh in all fairness.
Yeah. So on to racing points. So, as we've kind of covered, really, it was an awful day for them with their fight for third place in the Constructors' Championship. So Perez was running excellently in a podium position in third for most of the race until a engine failure. It was the MGUK which failed him with probably about five or six laps to go for the end of the race.
Yeah. And I think we've got to give him the commitment prize.
100%,
I mean, that car started to let go in turn one or two.
Yeah.
Basically ignored the smoke, kept his bloody foot in it until the whole thing was on fire, which wasn't until turn 10. So, you know, he did well, to be fair. And he was, and the fact that he kept his foot in it was probably, you know, sheer frustration. And it was just a case of, come on, let's see if we can get this thing to the end. Is it really blowing that badly?
That's true.
You know, I think when you saw flames licking out of the side of it, it's like, yeah, okay, I pretty much better park this now.
Yeah, and then you had obviously Stroll retiring with the accident, so it was pointless for the team called Racing Point. So it was
Racing Pointless this weekend, were they not?
Racing Pointless, that's right.
Absolutely.
So the Alfa Romeos, not really a good day. You had Raikkonen down in 15th, Giovinazzi in 16th. They got beaten by the Williams team this weekend, so they're going backwards at the moment, I think, Alfa Romeo.
I'd agree, they are a little bit, yeah.
Williams, as we said, so still no points, but they did outrace Alfa today with Latifi in P14 and Russell finishing ahead of Vettel in 12th. So another very good display by Russell. It was, you know, really good.
And George gets to strap on that Mercedes F1 car this coming weekend, doesn't he?
He does. Really excited about that. Really excited about that.
Very, 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 very excited about this.
And just to cover off the team, we got Haas. So obviously we have the did not finish for Grosjean because he ended up in the Armco barriers, as we discussed. And Kevin Magnussen.
Yeah, that car was not going to buff out, was it?
Really was not, no.
Pretty much written off, quite scarily.
You're not going to fix that with T-cut.
No, definitely not.
And then you had K-Mag finishing last on the track in P17. He lost his front wing at the start of the race, which is why he kind of ruined his race, really. And he struggled to make progress after that, really. So, not much more coming over the Haas team. So that kind of covers the race as such. So next weekend we are back at Bahrain for the Sakhir Grand Prix. And this is not the same track layout. So this is now the high speed outside loop effectively of the Bahrain track. So that's looking quite exciting.
How many laps are they doing for this Grand Prix?
Well, I don't know. I think it's about the same length. No, it's about the same length as Austria. So they're probably going to end up doing 80 odd laps, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a rapid Grand Prix weekend, isn't it?
It is, but it's going to be quite exciting, I think.
I think it will be. Yeah, looking forward to it.
So, what are your predictions for the podium?
I literally have no idea now.
I know it's hard.
I'm going to go with Valtteri Bottas to win.
Okay.
As much as I would love, and I noticed on Facebook this evening, a good friend of mine who lives down in Devon has put a cheeky tenner on Mr. Russell to win.
God,
I did see that. That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? But putting a sensible pair of trousers on for a minute, I think it is going to be Valtteri to win. Second, I'm going to shove. I don't know if they have Racing Point got any penalties this weekend because of replacing engines.
You know what? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Just because obviously Perez lunched his engine.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
If he hasn't and he gets up there, I'm going to shove Perez in second.
Okay.
And Max Verstappen in third. Because I just think the Red Bull's not quite got it. It's going to be a quick Grand Prix.
Okay. Interesting. I am going to say, let me think. I'm going to go for a Verstappen win.
Ooh.
You're right. It is going to be a fast Grand Prix. I don't know. I quite like the Honda engine. I think.
Oh, she's off the cuff. She's off the cuff. Oh, hello. Are we going back to Monza? Are we thinking Gasly? Are we up there?
No. Okay. So I'm going to go Verstappen to win, Bottas in second. It's that third place that I'm not unsure. If there is no penalty, I think it's going to be Perez.
Yeah.
If there is a penalty, I think Russell could perhaps get there.
He could pop in there. Russell could. It would be glorious, wouldn't it?
It would be.
Let's hope we're both massively wrong, and George Russell romps home to a maiden win for Mercedes.
Oh, it would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be glorious?
It would.
Ah, Mr. Bottas, I think you'll find your seat is at Williams next year.
Mr. Back
Russell,
to Williams.
Please come up and join Mr. Hamilton for 2021. That would be rather fantastic, would it not?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. So, Rich, I think that pretty much brings us to the end of the podcast. Have you enjoyed it?
I have enjoyed it, sir. Thank you. I've had a very, very busy day today, so this has been extremely cathartic to expose the wonders of the weekend just gone in Bahrain. The most important of which is that Romain Grosjean is fine and well and seemingly on the mend, which is
very important. Yeah,
Not least for Mrs. Grosjean and his three wonderful children. I think that's the most important thing.
100%, completely concur there. So I hope you've enjoyed at home as well this week's Bahrain review. And again, just a big shout out to the support staff and medical staff in Bahrain. He did an amazing job on Sunday. Absolutely amazing job. If you have enjoyed this, please give us a follow on Twitter at @lights_F1 or at @SeasonTicketDSR, that's Delta Sierra Romeo, or at Dougie Stone Radio. So until next week, goodbye and drive safely.
Have fun, people.
It's Formula One.